So you know well that there was a lot of football in the news this week. We won't talk about that today. We'll save it for tomorrow. Right, Jory?
Yes.
Jory knows the truth, but we'll save that for tomorrow. This week in the news, in the midst of all the football news, there was also some basketball news. Some of you saw this. If you're a Lakers fan, you saw this, right? What was in the headlines this week, Lakers fans? Kobe Bryant had surgery. Again. Right? So if you follow Lakers and basketball, if you follow Kobe Bryant, you know this is a big deal. He decided finally to have surgery on a torn rotator cuff that's been bothering him. The surgery now is going to require 9 months of recovery, which means for the third time in 3 years, Kobe Bryant is ending his basketball season early due to injury. And so, yeah, we'll save that for tomorrow too, my goodness. All right. Thinking of the State of the Union at this point. Kobe Bryant ends it early. And the reason it's a big deal is because after 3 years of this, people begin to talk, is this finally the moment for Kobe Bryant? Sacramento Bee thinks it's time. It's time for Kobe to call it a career. Many of you remember, it seems like yesterday when this guy was the 17-year-old, straight out of high school, joining the NBA, the star, and now it's 19 seasons later, almost 1,300 games, and even Kobe Bryant is succumbing to the inevitable. His body is aging at 35, 36 years old. His aging 30. Some of you, I know, would love to trade your body for his aging 35-year-old body. But in the world of sports, that's getting up there. And you can hear just under the surface of these headlines, people grappling with something just a little deeper. If even Kobe Bryant, who is one of, arguably, the most amazing basketball players of all time, can succumb to his body giving up on him, then what does that mean for the rest of us? Kobe has lived brilliantly and played brilliantly and remarkably, and he has some of the greatest skills of all time on the basketball court. He has some of the best surgeons working on his joints, his heel, his shoulder. He has the best PTs helping him recover, and yet even Kobe Bryant has to admit his body is getting old and not cooperating. See, the thing is, Kobe Bryant not so much has a body, but the way we've been saying it this year is Kobe Bryant is a body, isn't he? So it's Kobe in his body that's been able to do the remarkable, amazing things that have dazzled us, and yet it's also Kobe in his body, on the other hand, that means he can't do it forever, and maybe it's not much longer. The Apostle Paul, St. Paul from the Bible, he calls this the earthen vessel. Remember this in 2 Corinthians? The Apostle Paul says, we're clay pots. We are these vessels that are finite and breakable and even fragile. And yet, we also are able to contain a treasure in these broken and breakable, fragile clay pots. And the treasure Paul imagines is, yes, the amazing kinds of things like Kobe Bryant can do in special people, but even more than that, Paul says, in these earthen vessels, we carry a treasure, and it is the very Spirit of God in us. We are containers for salvation, we've been saying in this new year in the series. We are each a body, and we are all together a body. This is the Apostle Paul. And together we want to be a well body, a well church. And so we've been talking about this new year, being a well community all together. What does it look like to increase our wellness together? We've talked about contributing to the wellness of our broader neighborhood and city and world. How can we make a well world? We've talked about being well as artisans created in the image of God, invited to be co-creators with God in this world, making new and beautiful things. We've handed out a well church menu that's just tried to find one place where you can see one or two things that would help you find some practices for this new year that would increase your own wellness and contribute to your community's wellness. And so today, we want to consider that part of wellness that everyone expects. It's a New Year series. We're talking about wellness. We know eventually they're going to talk about physical wellness. You never hear about this, right? So this is an exciting thing for today. We're going to talk about body wellness, physical wellness. How many of you, real question, how many of you made a New Year's resolution that had something to do with physical wellness, your health, your exercise, eating better, something like that? How many of you made those New Year's resolutions? Yeah? You are not alone in this country, right? The top 10 New Year's resolutions, at least three or four of those top 10 have to do with there's quitting smoking, there's getting fit and active, there's eating healthy, and number one, any guesses? Number one New Year's resolution 2015. Very good. It was losing weight. That's a big deal lately to people, right? A constant New Year's resolution. Well, these are good. Today is January 31. This is, you don't have to raise your hand on this, but how's it going? January 31. According to statistics, it should be going fairly well. About two-thirds of you, just fewer than two-thirds of you, are still on track with your resolutions. If we check in again in June, it'll dip down to about 40%, but that's all right. But here's the good news. We joke about New Year's resolutions and stuff, but statistics also show that you are far more likely to accomplish a goal if you set it for yourself than if you don't. That kind of makes sense, right? But there's still something valuable about setting a goal and talking about it and sticking to it. So we're going to talk a little bit about physical wellness today and the importance of that. Some of it's things we've heard, but we need to have it in front of us again. In fact, we are fortunate. We are in a community of experts on this thing, so you don't need to hear from me. I am going to invite one of our local experts, Dominique Wakefield, who teaches in the health and exercise science department across the street, to join us today. Thank you, Dominique. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And we're just going to ask a few questions of Dominique about physical wellness. So we hear all kinds of things around us about how important wellness is, and sometimes it begins to just be a blur. Can you remind us succinctly again why it is that this stuff still matters?
I would love to. I would love to. But before I answer that question, if that's okay, good morning, church.
This is Dominique. Yeah.
Before I start talking, I told Vaughn maybe talking about physical wellness is good, mm-hmm. which we're going to do, but it's much more meaningful if we actually do something about it right away. So I thought maybe while we're talking a little bit up here, you could participate more actively. Would that be okay? I don't get a confident yes.
No, you didn't.
I'm not sure. But we'll try, maybe.
We can try. Usually we sit down for these interviews, but as we talk, we realize that probably wouldn't be appropriate.
No,
so
not
we're
really.
Standing.
So what I was thinking is, let's try this. Just do it with me. If you could just simply slide a little farther forward in your on your seats, yes, just a little bit. Put both feet on the ground.
So good.
And now I would like you to sit straight. Look how beautiful they all look now. Very nice. Pull your shoulders back. Good. And take a couple of deep breaths while we're talking. And try to remain in this position by engaging what we call our abdominal muscles. Good. So we're good.
Good.
So
we'll see some are either your students or they were in your chapel talk.
Probably.
So they know exactly what we're up to here.
Exactly.
Good.
So getting back to your question. So
why is this important?
Why is physical health still important? Well, obviously, as you just so mentioned, we live in our bodies. Our bodies is what keeps us going every single day. Our bodies is our foundation. It's our vehicle. It's what keeps us going. If our bodies are not well, we can't function in all other areas of life either. And as we've been hearing in the series, our bodies is not just the physical body, but it connects to many different dimensions, to our spiritual well-being, to our emotional well-being. But if our physical body is not well, it impacts all the other areas of well-being as well. And so our quality of life diminishes significantly if we're not well. And I think we know this. If we feel ill, we just don't feel like engaging in life the same way as if we feel healthy and if our bodies are healthy. So our quality of life diminishes. Also, I believe that if our physical body is not well, we are not nearly as effective in everything we need to do on a daily basis and not effective in what God has called us to do, whatever that may be. Because if we're ill and we're injured or we're not taking care of our bodies, then we can't work to this high level of quality that we're actually made to be. We are actually, I believe, our bodies are made extraordinarily. We are just amazing beings. It's unbelievable if you've studied or if you take an anatomy. I love it. I always say, if we had a zipper right here, and if you could just unzip it and see what happens all day long, it's truly a miracle. And so our bodies are very important for all areas of life to just work better.
Great. And so when we think about just general wellness and stuff, some of the things that we're at risk for, I mean, I think we have a general idea, but can you just remind us, scare us even, what are we at risk for if we're not living a balanced, healthy life?
I'd love to scare you a little
bit. She's good at this. Be scared.
So we live in a very interesting day and age. Obviously, 2015, our knowledge has increased significantly. Our technology has increased. And yet, we are doing a fantastic job destroying our own bodies, which is very interesting because if we go backwards about 100 years, life expectancy was a lot lower, right? I mean, people died of infectious diseases. We didn't have medication or antibiotics, but now we have those things, so our life expectancy is higher. So just a couple of facts. Average life expectancy in the United States is about, do you guys know? Yeah, 78-ish or so, okay? And so what is interesting, though, to see that even though that's our life expectancy, 12 years of that life towards the end are lived impaired. In other words, we destroy our body so that even though we're alive, our quality of life is very low, okay? We also know, for example, in 2015, that approximately 3.2 million people in the world die just because of physical inactivity. Because we don't move, we're dying. We have a new term that is very popular. You may have seen it. In fact, a week ago was on CNN headline news. Sitting is killing us. I'm not sure if you saw that, but it is true. Our society has become so sedentary that we are actually destroying ourselves by sitting too much. 25% of Americans sit for more than 8 hours a day. Are you in that category? Don't raise your hand. Just think about it. Are you in that category? Do you sit at least 8 hours or more per day, right? We also know that in the United States, 2/3 of our adult population is either overweight or obese. And without going into too much detail, we know that being overweight or obese can have tremendous impacts on your physical well-being, such as development of chronic diseases. Quick question. What is the number one killer in the United States right now? Does anybody know that? Very good. Heart disease. Heart disease is still the number one killer, and the second one is cancer. What is absolutely amazing is that the majority of these diseases can actually be prevented by our lifestyle choices. In other words, we are truly destructing ourselves by the things we do. And something that is really interesting in our field is we're looking at what is happening to our children and how is that going to impact our future? I don't know if you knew this, but every third child born since 2000 will have diabetes 2 in their lifetime. Wow. Every third child. Wow. And I ask when we have these conversations, I ask, well, how is this going to impact our schools, our churches, our communities, our government, our economy? It has tremendous impact that our physical bodies are not well and much due to what we do to them. Mm-hmm. I'll stop scaring.
Is that enough? You get the point, right? We know this stuff. Can you say just a little bit more, though, about the sitting is the new smoking thing, right? And this is a big deal. There's reasons for that, right? There's reasons why sitting is bad, and there's reasons why activity is good.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I am a huge fan of physical activity. Those of you who know me know that. But physical activity is tremendous power. There's so much power in movement that can help our physical bodies be well and therefore impact all the other areas of well-being as well. But this sitting disease has become so prevalent that we actually don't even realize what we're doing to our bodies, right? Really quickly, but if you think about the average American life, if you had to, you could sit and do pretty much anything. I mean, everything can be done at the click of a button. You could drive your car out of your garage and you could go shopping with a drive-through window, get your food, get your medicine. You never have to get out of the car. And you could drive home and maybe take three steps into your living room and that's it. And then sit for the rest of the evening. And that's what many people have been accustomed to doing. It's part of how our society has developed. So physical activity, therefore, has been diminishing and we're seeing the results of that, development of chronic disease. So physical activity is really powerful. I could stand here and talk for probably an hour about how powerful physical activity is, but just to give you a few little pointers, physical activity, immediately when you start being active, it doesn't even matter how intense, immediately your whole system starts reaping benefits. Your heart works more efficiently, it gets stronger, your lungs get stronger, your muscles grow and get stronger, your joints get stronger, your bones get stronger. Automatically, you start thinking more clearly. You have benefits for your brain, for your mental well-being. We know from research that when you engage in physical activity, it can help you with anxiety, with stress, with depression. It can help you in all areas of your life. Sleep. Immediately, we know when someone has been sedentary and they pick up physical activity, within that first week, immediately they will report they can sleep better and feel more rested. Mm-hmm. Immediately when you exercise, you have more energy. We all want energy, right? And we find other sources of that. Mm-hmm. But activity gives you energy. Also, what we know is that actually physical activity impacts all these other dimensions of wellness, which I think is very powerful. So physical activity can enhance your social well-being. It can enhance your relationships, your marriages. We have data on that. We also know that physical fitness and physical activity can impact your mental capability. It can impact your emotional well-being, also your spiritual well-being. So it has so many powerful results. And here's the best part that I want to say. It's free. Exactly. You don't have to buy it. You can do it. I always say when somebody says, oh, well, I don't have money for a gym membership, or I can't buy this bike, or what, well, I always say, so long as you have your body with you, you can move. Right? So anyway, that's just...
No, really helpful. So it's not necessarily saying like we all need to go run marathons or something. It's like parking at the end of the parking lot instead of looking for 3 hours for the closest spot.
Exactly. In fact, I'm glad you bring that up, and that's important for everybody. If you're currently not exercising, it's exactly what you're saying. It's not about running a marathon. If you want to, go for it, but you don't have to. We know that the greatest health benefits are reaped by even just 20 or 30 minutes of engaging in structured physical exercise, and then just simply being more active, like you said, parking farther away, standing more than sitting so long, walking around the block, just little things can make a huge impact on your overall well-being.
Really helpful. So now, one other thing I know that you've done a lot of work in is one that probably all of us have experienced at one time or another. We have so much information, so many different activities we can engage in, and yet somehow we still don't find ourselves either getting out the door or whatever, because motivation is hard. What can you tell us about motivation?
Motivation is very tricky, but motivation is a key element. We all know that the only way you're going to do something is if you have some motivation for it, whatever that may be. And so this has been a huge interest of mine because, like you said, we have all this information. I think all of you know activity is good for you, but the question is, why aren't we doing it, right? And so we all have barriers to overcome, and they're different for each person. And so motivation is a key factor. And there's no formula, and I think that's why we struggle. We love quick fixes. Somebody just tell us what to do and we'll do it. But with motivation, we all have different things that motivate us. For you, it might be you love being competitive, mm-hmm. and that's why you like to run a race. But for somebody else, it's maybe something totally different. They enjoy activity because they have a social connection with somebody. So the first thing is, if you're currently not really motivated for activity, is to think about, what would you enjoy? Would you enjoy doing activity with somebody else? Would you enjoy a certain type of activity? Maybe you like nature, so you want to think about, how can I move in nature? So find connections of things you enjoy. Research tells us that people who find physical activity they enjoy are more likely to stick with it for longer periods of time. And I have a lot of clients and patients and students that ask me, well, I think the only way for me to be active is to run, but I hate running. I said, well, then don't run.
Yeah, exactly.
Find a different activity. It's not just about a certain formula. You want to find something that you enjoy. So that's key number one for motivation, enjoyment. So find something, and maybe you don't know. Maybe you need to try and then see what you enjoy, okay? The other thing is that we know that if we have knowledge, good knowledge, proper knowledge about the benefits and the consequences of not being active, it can give us some what we call extrinsic motivation towards going into the right step. And we know when we work with someone who hasn't been active, and I get to work with them, say, for 3, 4, 5 months, and I manage to get them to enjoy it, they could build what we call intrinsic motivation for activity, and that really means they simply start enjoying the exercise for the exercise itself. So that's maybe a little too long, but in a nutshell, enjoyment is key. Find something you enjoy to do.
So you're giving us permission to enjoy our exercise.
Yes, you should. It should be enjoyable, not a chore.
Can you, last thing, can you tell us just a little bit? You've been doing this for a long time, clearly passionate about it, teaching across the street, and can you tell us just a little bit about how just your physical health and all these kinds of things have played a role in your own experience of God and spirituality and faith and that kind of thing?
I definitely. I feel that in my life, it has been a huge element in my journey, in my spiritual wellness journey, in my physical wellness journey. Just in a nutshell, I grew up very active. I was blessed with a family who was very active, engaged in sports and activity and so on. But we all grow up and we all have to make our own choices at some point. And so as I went on, at some point, I started making poor choices where I became less and less physically active. And what was very interesting, as I reflect on that experience, as I started being less physically active, all other areas of wellness went downward as well, including my spiritual life. I felt that, as I mentioned earlier, clarity of mind. I felt I was clouded. I felt that I couldn't connect really. I couldn't concentrate. I had a hard time really connecting with God at that time because I was also unhappy with myself and I felt guilty. And I know many of us are in that same boat. When you don't do the things you know you should do, there's guilt and there's maybe even shame about, I know I should do something else. And so it impacted my spiritual life significantly. And when I finally hit a rock bottom point where I was very unhappy, and just so you know my background, I actually gained a tremendous amount of weight at some point, and I was in a place where I was very unhappy and unhealthy. And I decided one day, I can't do it alone anymore, and I sought help, and I asked God to intervene. And as I made that choice to say, I need your help, starting at that point when I started making better choices with God's help, immediately, not only did my physical well-being go up, but my spiritual well-being increased in a very positive way that I could really see how they interact together. And it became ever more clear that the way we were created is not just in one dimension. We're not just a body. We are also, as you mentioned, the spirit lives within us, and we have a mind and a spirit and a body. And that connection became really clear to me. And so I just want to encourage everybody to experience that.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, it would probably be appropriate. I checked, and we first stood up to greet each other at 12:04, so we're getting close to an hour. Should we maybe move just a little bit? Stand up?
Yeah, I think...
If you've been doing the thing, good job. A lot of you look relaxed, but... Good. good job to all of you who did it.
What they might want to know is, as you mentioned, if they want to stand up just for a moment, did you know that once you sit for 20 minutes... that your brain sends a message to your body that it's time to go to sleep? That means you are not capable
not
of taking
yet.
Anything in. So, but I'll leave you to
no,
that.
No, perfect. So please stand up, because we have just a few minutes left. Dummy, thank you so much.
We
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good, so you can take a deep breath and just stretch a little bit and have a seat. We want to finish with just a couple thoughts in addition to this. So grateful to have people like Dominique and Dr. Rob Thomas, who shared with us at 9:30 this morning. Yesterday, I was headed out the office door to go and meet over at the health science department to talk about how these health scientists were going to help us think about spirituality. And when I walked out the office door, right over here, I nearly ran into Dr. Webster and his wife, Cheryl, and they were on their bicycles. As you know, Dr. Webster is one of our bright theologians. And I thought, this is perfect. I'm going to speak to our health scientists about spirituality, and our theologians are riding their bikes. This is the image that we're thinking about. It's an integration of spirituality and physicality, of theology and body. All of this comes together. In this community, we don't like a big gap between that. So here's what I want to finish with. Over the next few minutes, just share three brief principles that now come from the spirituality side of experiencing our physical bodies. This matters in addition to these practical things. So here's just three principles. They actually are ABCs. Short words, you can hopefully remember them a little bit better this way. Accept, beware, and connect. And I just want to start with accept. Accept is such an important word when it comes to talking about our bodies and our spirituality and our physicality and God and all of this, right? Accept is a big word. We begin with accepting that this is the body that you've got, right? You can't make changes about that. And that it is a beautiful body. So we mean that quite serious and quite deeply. I know probably most of us in here are not getting calls from magazines to pose on the cover of them, right? We can't all say that we're that kind of beautiful, but isn't that kind of beautiful almost pointless, right? It matters a whole lot in our culture, but it's not that important. When we say beautiful, we mean something like this ancient idea of what the psalmist says in Psalm 139. This will be familiar to many of you. This is what the psalmist says about his own body. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, and I know that full well. That's accept. Accept that God has done a great job putting us together. And yes, our bodies are not perfect, and they're broken, and they're awkward, and there's things we wish we could change, but at the very core, if God made them, they're good, and they're beautiful, and they're wonderful. We also want to accept that your body is yours, not someone else's. God gave your body to you, not to someone else. So you have both the privilege and the responsibility, the freedom and the power to decide what you do with your body, not others. So Paul talks about this, and he puts it in a different way, but his context matters. This is his first letter to the Corinthians. Paul cares about the body. This is chapter 6, verses 19 and 20. He says, again, some familiar words, "Don't you know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you? Don't you know that you have the Holy Spirit from God, and you don't belong to yourselves," Paul says. "You have been bought and paid for, so honor God with your body." Now, here's what Paul is saying that matters. Paul is saying, you've been bought and paid for, which means, guess what? You don't belong to anybody else, but you belong to God. In Paul's world, people literally belong to a lot of other people. Slaves belong to masters. Women belong to men. Paul says, God has ransomed you, and so you belong to God. God dwells in you, and so really, no one else owns you. Your body belongs to you, no one else. And so you have the privilege and the responsibility, the freedom and the power to determine what you do about it. Paul cares about the body. So we accept that the body is good. God has created it that way. We celebrate it and we rejoice in the wonderful body that God has given to each of us. The second point is to beware. We could say be vigilant. We could say be discerning, because not all health is created equal, right? I happened to receive an email yesterday from Yahoo that said the 7 worst ways to lose weight. Okay, that's interesting. You know, they're figuring a whole bunch of people are working on some New Year's resolutions this year. The 7 worst ways to lose weight. There's a lot of ideas out there, and they decided to point out some of the worst ones. My favorite was number 4. It is called gas mask training. Have you heard of this? This is a thing. It is real. Gas mask training is the idea that if you wear a gas mask or something else that inhibits your oxygen intake, you will starve your muscles, and so they will work even harder in exercise. And how efficient will that be? The Yahoo article just said, that's a dumb idea unless you're training to actually live in a gas mask. It said, our lungs are not made to be starved of oxygen. In other words, the word starve involved in a practice that is supposed to be healthy is kind of misplaced, isn't it? There's nothing healthy or well about starving anything. Not all kinds of health is created equal. And it takes some discernment to filter through the millions of ideas that are out there. And I think a lot of us, you are able to make these discernments with your intuition. But there's at least one that I think is important just to name in this worship context. And that is the one about shame. Approaches to health that use shame are not healthy approaches to health. These are not paths towards wellness when shame is involved. Now, guilt, maybe. And Dominic mentioned guilt. Guilt may be a quite functional thing, right? Guilt is just that feeling where you know, something in you knows, I probably should have done this, I didn't. And so your body is unsettled about that. Your mind and heart are unsettled because you need to probably try to do better in the future. Guilt is functional. Guilt is great. But guilt is also value-free. Shame is when we begin to tack on worth and value to those things. And we begin to feel like I am worthless or valued less because of my body or whatever. So, important to remember that if an approach to or an attitude about health makes you feel ashamed of your body, this isn't a holistic, a healthy path towards wellness. Shame has no place in well bodies. If it keeps you from saying, I'm made in the image of the Creator and my body is good, if an approach stops you from saying that, try a different approach to health. We are proud and happy and thankful for our bodies, not ashamed of them. So beware, not all health is created equal. Finally, number three, last one, connect. We could say connect with your createdness. We could say connect with your physicality. We could say connect with creation because we are created beings in creation. Dominique reminded us of some of these things. Because if the only way we experience God is through our physical bodies, because that's all we have, then it probably really matters that we're in touch with all the many senses and feelings and experiences of our body, isn't it? Pastor Chris and I have mostly the same drive home down the 91 towards Grand Terrace and then Loma Linda. And the other day I got home and had gotten a text from her. It was a late weeknight. And she said, the text said, slick ride home, wasn't it? Felt like 2002. And when I read that, I don't think I replied, but I was confused. Slick ride home. Well, it is winter, but it's California. So did we have ice on the road that I didn't know about? And I was thinking about it. I don't remember. Did I go right over ice at 80 miles an hour? I don't remember that. And then I thought, okay, maybe it's a construction thing. So they've been clearing and widening the lanes a little bit more. If you drive on that, it's been better. And I figured, well, maybe that's what she meant. But what I realized is it took three more times driving 30 minutes on the freeway before I got to the end and realized that I had actually paid attention enough to notice that, yeah, they had opened a new lane for a little while on the freeway. And have you had this happen? I drove three times down the freeway without even being aware of anything that was going on around me other than the bumpers in front of me. Sometimes we get so caught up in a very narrow-focused life that we miss all the things going on around us. We've learned from kindergarten we have five senses, right? You probably know, researchers say, actually, Aristotle said that 2,000 years ago, it's sort of helpful, but we really have a multitude of senses. We have balance and temperature and sort of spatial awareness and all these things. Some people say as much as 30 kinds of senses. And yet, the way we live our lives in the 21st century, you know this is true, don't you? We tend to focus on a very limited number of those senses in the kinds of things that we do all day. There's a director, I heard the story of a director of a training program for cruise ship pilots. Okay, there's a career for you. He directs a program that trains cruise ship pilots. And here's what he had to say about his students that came to learn how to drive these giant cruise ships, like in San Diego and Long Beach. He said, there's two kinds of students who come to him. Those who grew up playing video games, and those who grew up playing in the woods and outdoors, right? So you know what's coming here, right? The former, the ones who grew up playing video games, they are amazing at operating the incredible technology that's in these modern cruise ships. They're amazing. It comes second nature. They're amazing at it. He said the other group, what they're amazing at is actually knowing where the cruise ship is in the water. And he means this quite seriously. They have, those who grew up playing in the woods and nature have this intuitive sense of where this giant ship is in the water, and sort of they know where to move it and how to maneuver it to get it where it needs to go because it comes more naturally to them. And this director is not putting down on the technology stuff. He says, we need both in an excellent cruise ship driver. That technology is important. It's amazing. And we need people who sort of have an awareness of the world and natural world around them. In a study done a few years ago, researchers found, and you know this, kids were plugged in, guess how many hours a week into electronic devices? 44 hours per week, right? They updated a couple years later, 53 hours a week. I imagine it's even a little higher. But this is not just kids, right? As an adult, think of how many hours that you are on an electronic device. So Richard, some of you right now on your electronic devices, we know that. I'm looking at a screen in the back. And a digital clock, I'm aware. We're almost there. So all of this research led a guy from San Diego. His name is Richard Louv. He coined the term nature deficit disorder. Nature deficit disorder. Well, he's not making a medical diagnosis, but it's kind of a social scientific kind of thing. He initially started focusing on kids, but eventually realized this is all of us that are experiencing this. What he's describing is that we've sort of lost our ability to know where the cruise ship is because there's something about nature and being in the natural world that uses all of our many senses, and it's important. So he's saying we've got to get out in nature for these very reasons. It's important. And he is not at all like downing technology. This is not a nostalgic wish for the good old days when we didn't have all this. He's aware that this technology is amazing and it's important, but here's his point. The more technology we are engaged in, the more we need to be engaged in nature in order to have balanced kinds of lives. So the more technology we have, the more we've got to be in nature. It's even more important to be engaged in the very tangible, earthy kinds of things that are available to us. And here's the kind of really meaningful things he says in this book, because he's quite passionate about it, and he's talking about a deeper sense of well-being and spirituality, physical wholeness, as well as whole person wellness. Here's a couple quotes from him. This is what he says in his book. He says, you got to get outside, we got to be in nature, but listen to some more inspiring language. Most of us intuitively understand that all spiritual life, however it is defined, begins with and is nourished by a sense of wonder. The natural world is one of our most reliable windows into wonder, and at least to some, into a spiritual intelligence. Wonder, awe, that's biblical language, right? We praise, we worship, we be in awe. And he says nature is the best resources for rekindling a sense of awe and wonder. He also says this, for the jaded and the weary among us, and I don't know if those words connect with some of you, for the jaded and the weary among us, the outdoor world can expand our senses and reignite a sense of awe and wonder not felt since we were children. It can support better health, enhance creativity, new careers, business opportunities, and act as a bonding agent for families and communities. Nature, he says, can help us feel fully alive. Fully alive. Fully alive, I think, is a symptom of well people, well bodies, well communities. Jesus said, I have come so that you can be fully alive, experience life to the full. So yeah, our bodies are not perfect. We've all been dealt different cards and have different things to do about, and we all have our lists of complaints and frustrations and disappointments with our bodies. But we each are alive. Because we are a breathing body, we are alive. And we are each made in the image of a creator who calls us, who calls our bodies good and delightful. We are containers of salvation. We are dwelling places for the very Spirit of God. And that is a call to wellness for each of us as persons. So I invite you then, as we close, to close together with these words of the psalmist, may these be words that we are more and more able to say as true in our hearts and souls for our bodies and our lives. Let's read this together, Psalm 139. For you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, and I know that full well.